The cycle of revenge and retaliation happens all over the world, from the Middle East to Northern Ireland. William Urey keeps a close eye on it. He's a specialist in the art of negotiation and mediation at Harvard Law School. Urey says it's not impossible to end cycles of violence, but when you're hurt, there's a certain logic to revenge.
From the outside, it seems almost senseless, but from the inside, you're trapped, and it seems like it's the only reasonable thing to do if you're going to stay alive or you're going to somehow... It's each side trying to educate the other that they cannot hit you without paying a big price. And each side, I think, has now proved, I hope, to each other's satisfaction, but certainly to the world's satisfaction, that each side is very good at making the other side lose. But I think what's also been proven is that neither side has been actually able to win, and neither side will be able to win except at the negotiating table, together, in reaching some kind of solution that meets the essential needs of both sides.
Now, we have more than 50 years now of battling having gone on in the Middle East. Where do you begin?
There have been a number of attempts, and particularly in the 90s, where Israelis, ordinary Israelis, and Palestinians have gotten together. And so there are these attempts at reconciliation. They've been small scale, but they do illustrate the potential for larger scale reconciliation. And after all, I mean, if you think about sort of Middle East conflicts, I mean, the very beginning of steps towards Middle East peace, which date back to the 70s, when President Sadat of Egypt made his dramatic trip to Jerusalem, I mean, he essentially was beginning to address the deep-seated fears and distrust that were dividing the Arabs and the Israelis. He himself, his own analysis was that over 90% of the conflict was in fact psychological. And by boldly offering to fly to the capital of his enemy, even though he made no substantive concessions, he changed the whole dynamic, the whole psychological dynamic, and in effect created a climate in which diplomatic negotiations could then conclude the first peace treaty between Israel and Egypt. And I think we need to look and ask ourselves at this point, what's the equivalent now of flying to Jerusalem?
I'm curious. I don't remember what it was like before Sadat made that grand gesture. Is there a Mandela somewhere in the West Bank? Is there a de Klerk? Are there leaders waiting to make those kinds of changes possible?
My guess is yes, there are people who could play those roles. It's probably not Sharon. And it's also hard to imagine that it might be Arafat. I mean, here are these two lonely, embittered old men, really, old warriors who've been fighting for decades. They're very much entrapped in their dispute. But both of them, I think, somewhere in there have a yearning about their legacy. And it may not be them, but there may be others who will come to the fore. And let me just say this, Jim, that, peace in many ways is much harder than war. It takes more patience. It takes more persistence. It often takes more courage. We've seen it happen in South Africa. It was seemed impossible. We're seeing it happen right now in Northern Ireland between Catholics and Protestants, which also seemed impossible. And if it can happen in South Africa and Northern Ireland, I don't see any reason why it couldn't happen between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
There are a lot of elements to this. The senseless killing is, of course, the one that we see on the front pages of the newspaper every day. And what we're in immediate need of is some kind of cessation of the violence, a ceasefire.
Right.
But as you also said, in the long run, the only way it's really going to work is if there is a feeling that each side can give and receive forgiveness.
Yeah, I'll give you just one example from my own experience. It was also a Middle Eastern conflict, although it wasn't the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It was a conflict between the Kurds and the Turks, another terrible conflict that doesn't get that much attention but has claimed at least as many lives. I was facilitating a kind of an off-the-record conversation between a group of Turkish leaders and Kurdish leaders. It couldn't even take place in Turkey because it was too dangerous. It was taking place in France. And things were very rocky. And at one point in that meeting, we had a 3 or 4 day meeting, there was a Turkish general, actually an admiral, who got up to his feet and said, "I'd like to say something. As a member of the Turkish Armed Forces, I just want to acknowledge that in the course of this terrible war, there have been many, many innocent Kurds who have suffered greatly, lost their lives, lost their children, and I want to apologize for that. And you could have heard a pin drop in the room when he said that. There was total silence. And then the Kurds began kind of clapping, and then their Turkish colleagues joined them. And there was no substantive concession made, but that simple acknowledgement of the pain and suffering of the other side shifted the climate of the meeting such that we could then begin to address more difficult issues. And it's the same kind of dynamic that I think that needs to begin to happen in the Middle East, is even before apology, a simple acknowledgement of the pain and the suffering over decades of the Palestinian people or of the Israelis in many situations, so that you begin that way. It humanizes the situation and it opens the door to more progress along those lines. I must say that forgiveness is perhaps the hardest work that human beings can do, and that we often confuse forgiveness with forgetting. Forgiveness is not the same as forgetting. It's not the same as condoning. It's not the same as absolving people of responsibility. But what it does mean is it means letting go of hatred and letting go of the desire for vengeance.
In South Africa, forgiveness has been talked about quite a lot. You've watched that situation as well. Are there lessons there we can learn?
I do think so. I think we can learn a lot from the situation in South Africa. I spent some time there both during the actual conflict and during the transformation. And it was just amazing to me to see a situation that was perceived to be as intractable and as difficult as the situation in the Middle East. And within a process of about 6 years, you saw a remarkable political transformation. And one of the key lessons was the importance of forgiving and letting go. It comes to leadership, but de Klerk acknowledged publicly many times that apartheid had been a mistake. Mandela had done incredible work, spiritual work, to basically let go of the rancor that he must have felt and the anger that he must have felt, to pave the way for what he wanted, which was a multiracial South Africa, not just a South Africa for the blacks alone, but for all races to live together in peace and prosperity. And then at the end, there was this experimentation with, we can't just bury the past, which is some people's inclination, because it's just, those wounds are still there. So they set up the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And that played a role, a very important role on the media and on television. They had the victims come up and be able to tell their stories. And even many of the perpetrators came forward and apologized and told their stories. And bringing out the truth was an incredibly important part of the experience. Was it perfect? No. Were the victims entirely satisfied? No. But actually, I have a quote here somewhere from one of the victims. And after testifying in front of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, he said, "I feel what's been making me sick all the time is the fact that I couldn't tell my story." And so just the power of being able to tell your story and have it be heard and acknowledged, that alone can play a very important role in the healing process that's necessary. And we're just at the beginning now of we know a little bit about how this happens among individuals, but how can it happen among whole peoples? And I think the South African experience points the way. And we're just at the verge of learning, how do you orchestrate, how do you facilitate processes in which large numbers of people can go through some kind of reconciliation so that they can live in peace together?
William Urey directs the negotiation program at the Harvard Law School.